Morning, Gary. How are you? Good. This can be.
Maggie, are you here somewhere with my book? Can I borrow your agenda? Commissioner Leonard here. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the City Council chambers. In just a few minutes, I'll be gaveling us into official order after we call the roll. We, though, have two very important acknowledgments to make prior to undertaking the city's business. Before I do that, the rules of the chamber are, if you're a lobbyist, you need to declare that you are a lobbyist either for some sort of organization or business when you introduce yourself, if you've signed up to speak or you are speaking at the mic. We also need your first and last name. We do not want your address. We do not want your phone number. We do not want your email address either. If you like something, you're welcome to put your thumbs up. If you don't like something, you're welcome to put your thumbs down, but there's no clapping, there's no burping, there's no noise in response to any testimony. I facilitate the chamber in a manner that all views are welcome and encouraged. So with that, I'd like to start by acknowledging the fact that we lost a member of the mayor's extended staff team, and more importantly, the city lost a great Portlander on Saturday to an unexpected, completely surprising heart attack. His five children, his parents, and Dana are all grieving, as we are for his loss. Rob Ingram served in a number of positions in the city, and most recently as the director of the mayor's office of gang violence reduction. He also had worked for Commissioner Saltzman and for Mayor Tom Potter. So if you could join me in a moment of silence for the passing of Rob Ingram. Thank you. I'd now like to recognize Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. On tomorrow, December 1st, the flag of the City of Portland will be lowered to honor 13-year-old Julio Marquez, who died from homicidal violence. Julio was a student at the David Douglas School District. He skateboarded for 3 years on the East Portland Community Center skate team, where he showed talent and a positive, upbeat attitude. We are saddened that the community has lost a young person to a senseless act of violence. Julio's story reminds us that each child is a child of the community, and we need to take care of all of our children. Our thoughts are with his family, friends, and loved ones during this difficult time. This is the ninth time that we've lowered the city flag since April of 2009 to honor our children. Today we're joined by Santigi Fofana-Dura, who runs the skateboarding team at the East Portland Community Center. Santigi, if you'd like to come up and say a few words.
My name's Santigi Fofana-Dura, and I knew Julio for a couple years. And he was a really good kid. And it's unfortunate what happened. I've been talking with other people on the skate team about this, and there's been a lot of sadness, but at the same time, we got to be strong and keep moving on. And because there's more kids out there, and this situation can happen again. And so there's a lot of people in this building and in this city that have the power to help with what's going on. And I just want to bring the message from all the people over there that we just want peace, and that's just what we want, is we just want peace and help. Thank you.
Thank you. And then I would ask that we would have also a moment of silence in honor of Julio Marquez. Thank you.
And on a more cheerful note, I don't think that the morning session should pass without acknowledging the fantastic work of Commissioner Randy Leonard and the amazing success at keeping Bull Run Water. Bull Run Water. Thank you, Commissioner. Congratulations and your team. You can clap on this one. Council officially come to order. Today is Wednesday, November 30th, 2011. It's 9:30 a.m. for morning session. How are you, Carla?
I'm well, thank you.
Are you enjoying the fall colors?
I am.
Could you please call the roll?
Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Quorum is present. We shall proceed, beginning with communications. Can you please read the title for 1243?
Request of Polly Waller to address council regarding 4% for the indigent proposal.
Polly Waller. Polly Waller. Hi.
Hello.
Welcome to the City Council.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Polly Waller. Thank you, Mayor Adams and City Commissioners, for this opportunity. I come today by myself, but with the support and encouragement in Portland from family, friends, neighbors, business owners, educators, clergy, and people I've met on our streets and shared this proposal to address homelessness. Proposed is a mandate to use 1% of building construction budgets for new and remodeled commercial and public buildings in the metropolitan region to create rest and shelter space for homeless people. The idea is modeled after the 2% for the arts program, reasoning that if our aesthetic pleasures deserve 2% of building construction budgets, basic human rights deserve even more. However, yesterday I met with a key downtown business owner who was supportive of the idea, but advised starting small and growing from there. The 4% that appears on the agenda is revised to 1%. The mandate would cover buildings in the metropolitan region and include supervised inside space separate to itself that would provide a place for people who had nowhere to go. As budgets would allow, it could be anything from a stand, sit and rest room to full facilities of a shelter space with bathroom, shower, kitchen, and sleeping spaces. Supervisors for managing health and safety concerns within the shelter space could be trained from those who use the space to maintain a healthy environment. I hope to see this program federally mandated in the future with matched federal funds that are annual to create a more sustainable program. The mandate includes commercial buildings, as I believe business plays an important role in creating the equity for citizens the Portland community wants. By physically giving space for those who have the least, the widening economic gap affecting us all and leaving the poorest stranded is lessened. Improving the lives of the indigent citizens improves the quality of life for the whole community and will strengthen the economic structure in general. In the philanthropic spirit of Simon Benson, who provided public drinking fountains in 1912 to quench the thirst of loggers so they wouldn't go to the taverns, and my great-great-great-grandfather, Matthew Patton, who gave a block of land for the first home for the aged and poor in 1888, which was developed into the Patton Home on Michigan Street in North Portland, Portland should become a model for the nation by initiating the 1% for the homeless program. I hope to return with signed petitions for the 1% for the homeless. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And if you wouldn't mind on your way out, Commissioner Fish's office is over there, and they have some, I think, some useful information that would help and aid in your efforts.
Thank you very much.
All right. Can you please read the title for 1244?
Request of Jeffrey Bernards to address council regarding state ballot initiative to ban use of studded tires.
Yeah. Good morning. Welcome. Welcome back.
Thanks, man. Yeah. I'm not here about the CRC today, but similar.
Transportation, I hope.
Yeah, oh, all the way. So my name is Jeff Bernards. I'm with PreservingOregonRoads.com, in case you want to visit our site. And so I have been trying to work with my legislator for years to figure out why nothing's being done about studded tires. So after much research, I found out that special interest has been blocking it. And here in the Portland area, 90% of us don't use them. The road damage we see out there is caused by 10% of the people. And when the legislative fact sheet, they had a bill in front of the legislature's last session, and the legislative fact sheet used Portland as a model and said a new road in Portland should last 12 to 15 years. With studded tire use, it's cut in half. It's cut to 7. With concrete, it's a concrete road should last 35 to 40 years. With studded tire use, it's 15 years. With the current state of the budget with PDOT, I think it's in our best interest that we all sign on to stopping this damage. It's only caused by 10% of the people. They make a new studless snow tire that outperforms studded tires. A studded tire is not a snow tire. It's an ice tire, which is 1% maybe of our driving conditions. And if it's that nasty out, it would be better for people to stay home the one day than drive for 150 days with studded tires. I was out gathering signatures at the public library on November 2nd. Someone drove down 10th Avenue with studded tires. It was sunny out. I think it's been a little overkill, and I think it's an issue that we need to talk about and not just ignore, and it's been ignored by our legislatures. In 1974, ODOT wanted to get rid of studded tires. It's been that hot a topic, and I had a little free time. I thought, oh, I'll do this, you know. Now I realize what a job you guys have. I have one issue. You've got about 10 on your agenda every day. I thank you for doing the job that you do. I mean, I have my haters out there, but, it's just we need to change and use the new technology tire. I think that it'll save our roads, save our budgets, and allow for safer driving conditions because of the ruts that are created fill with water. In my little car, hydroplanes down the road. I was with the Columbia County Democrats, so I drove out to St. Helens yesterday. That road is ruined, and there is no money to fix it. So I think that saving money is just as important as finding new money to build roads. I think we could save a lot of money by doing that because some of the estimates are $50 million a year in road damage. Well, that was based on $20 oil. Oil's $100 a barrel. It's not going to be $50 million in damage every year. It's going to be a lot more. So anyway, thanks for your time, and that was PreservingOregonsRoads.com.
Thank you for your work. Appreciate it.
I do have petitions here.
Can you please read the title for item number 1245?
Request of Moses Rosen to address council regarding the occupation movement.
Mr. Rosen. All right. Can you please? Can you please read the title for communications item number 1246?
Request of Jerry Dusenberry to address council regarding recognition of former Portland police officer Mickey Pease, founder of PAL Boys Club.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Jerry Dusenberry, and each one of you should have received a packet from me about a week ago relative to my purpose and intent before the council. Excuse me. I'm requesting your favorable consideration relative to memorializing, recognizing an outstanding public servant of years past. Mickey Pease was pretty much a one-man show in founding the PAL Boys Club, currently 92nd Southeast Harold Street, known as the Waddles Boys and Girls Club now. The city has recognized other outstanding civil servants, public individuals that have contributed significantly, measurably to the community. And unfortunately, Mickey has been overlooked over those years. And I think that's a travesty. As a matter of fact, I'm embarrassed. I'm chagrined in that I've not addressed this much earlier. But his legacy continues. Mickey Hiss helped many, many thousands of young people in the decades of the 1950s. We had a very sad memorial this morning about this 13-year-old youngster. That was his intent, to save, to salvage, to help a lot of kids. He provided a home away from home. He was an inspiration. Mickey was not only a Portland police officer, he was an inventor, a Huxman, if you will. He designed a traveling show for so the kids can put on some entertainment to various functions, trampoline activity, weightlifting, and so forth. And this is how he helped fund the Pal Boys Club back then. Mickey is the quintessential epitome of the cop and the kid, illustrated and epitomized by Norman Rockwell's paintings. So it's not too late. I again request that the council endeavor to establish some kind of a recognition for him. There is some seed money, as we indicated, to promote this endeavor. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Well, just a thank you for spending your time to come here to City Council to remind us of someone who very quietly provided what is a much-needed service for East Portland. We appreciate it very much.
I would add, my chief of staff serves on the board of the Police Activities League, and we'd be happy to look into some sort of future recognition of Mickey.
Great.
We'll work with you.
Thank you.
All right, that gets us to the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Carla, would you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We have three time certains. Can you please read the first, which is a report to council, item number 1247.
Combined Sewer Overflow Program Final Report.
Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Well, thank you, Mayor. As you may have noted in the title, this is the Combined Sewerage Overflow Program Final Report. Yes, I'm sure you're all glad. We've updated you, I think, every 6 months on the program over many years, and today is the end of that because it is the official end of our 20-year construction program to control combined sewer overflows into the Willamette River and into the Columbia Slough, to end them more or less. The city's agreement with the Department of Environmental Quality requires that we complete the program by tomorrow, December 1st, 2011, and I'm happy to report that we will meet that deadline on time and on budget. This is no small feat. This program was comprised of more than 300 separate construction projects over the last two decades. The projects ranged in scope from individual homeowners disconnecting their downspouts to constructing massive tunnels to capture and convey combined sewage to our treatment plant in North Portland. In addition to the benefits to our environment and to public health, the CSO program employed thousands of people and spent money on local goods and services. The contractors for both the West and East Side Big Pipe projects also exceeded goals for contracting with minority-owned, women-owned, and emerging small businesses. It is because of that kind of a commitment that the Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs named the Bureau of Environmental Services in 1995 and again in 2011 one of the public agencies of the year. Completing the CSO project doesn't mean our work is finished. Portland is committed to expanding green stormwater infrastructure that will complement the pipe system. We need the green infrastructure to maintain the integrity of our pipe system. And we also need it because it's the right thing to do. Managing stormwater at its source will ensure that we continue to keep stormwater runoff out of our combined sewer as Portland grows and develops. So altogether, the CSO projects over the last 20 years cost an estimated $1.4 billion. It is the largest public works project in Portland's history. As I said earlier, it's been done on time and on budget. We really had no state or federal support to accomplish this project. The cost was borne by Portland's sewer ratepayers, and their investments have ensured a cleaner, healthier Willamette River and Columbia Slough for us and for many generations to come. So I want to thank Portland sewer ratepayers for their perseverance. And now I want to turn it over. We have a 12-minute video narrated by CBS 60 Minutes host Leslie Stahl. But before that, we're going to turn it over to Dean Marriott and Paul Gribben for a few words.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor, members of the Council, Dean Marriott, Environmental Services. I just have a few words to say since I won't be making my biannual report to you on this in the future. This is a moment in history. This really is turning the page. As Portland was founded 150 years ago, we have used the Willamette as a sewer. And it wasn't until 1951 that we even had wastewater treatment. So we have a sort of sorry history of how we've treated our natural resources. And we've been making amends since the 1950s. And this marks yet another page in our history. And it's a really positive story. As the commissioner mentioned, the benefits are really quite impressive. We're going to go from 100 days a year where we've allowed sewage to discharge into the river to no more than four. And those will be primarily in the wintertime. And they will be caused by events such as we had last week, where we had 3 to 4 inches of rain. So on most winter days, you no longer will see this sewage in the river sign up. The river will be safe for recreational use. And I think that's going to mean a significant change in the way this community addresses the river. There's going to be a lot more interest in recreational access. There's going to be a lot more interest in developing and redeveloping our interface with the river. And those are all positive signs.
We'll have more people sign up for the Portland Triathlon.
Yeah, you betcha. And they'll want to be swimming alongside of you, Mayor, I know.
Yes, of course.
I want to just take a moment to say this effort started in 1991. At the time, Commissioner Earl Blumenauer was in charge of BES, and he led the discussions with Oregon DEQ. That was picked up by Commissioner Gretchen Kifori and Mike Lindbergh in 1993 that led a conversation with the community about just what kind of a cleanup effort we wanted to have. And that final amended order was approved in April of 1994, the week I arrived. So I was handed that order as sort of, this is your assignment. And ever since then, we've been working on this, and we've tried to keep it cost-effective. As the commissioner said, we're completing this effort on budget. We wanted to be open and transparent. I came before you every 6 months, and I came before your predecessors every 6 months to talk about how we were doing. We went out to the community, engaged all of the folks that would likely be affected by the work before it started, so that we would know how it would affect them, how we could change the design, change the construction of the project to minimize the impact on the community. We wanted to grow local jobs and local businesses. And as the commissioner said, we've actually gotten awards for those efforts. And we wanted this work to be done safe. We wanted everybody who went to work in the morning or in the evening to go home safe after the job was done. And we've been successful at that. So before I introduce the video, I want to turn to my colleague Paul Gribben, who's been instrumental over the last decade in making this project a success. Paul?
So I'm Paul Gribben. I'm the manager of the tunnel program for the Bureau. I've been tasked with putting a ribbon on 10 years in 2 minutes, so see what I can do. When we first contemplated doing this program, tunnels were always a last resort. We did not do these by choice. We did these because there were no other options left. And we did research about these types of projects throughout the U.S., and we got very depressed. Cost overruns, delays, disputes, lawsuits not only were common, but they were normal. Since one of our success criteria was staying off the front page of the Oregonian, we figured, okay, we're going to have to try something different. And we were very fortunate, when I think back to how fortunate we were. One is the legal flexibility in Oregon to go with an alternate contracting approach. Oregon doesn't restrict in how you can approach a particular project. The other thing was the political support that we had. Commissioner Salzman was very supportive. The city council at the time was very supportive of us trying an alternate approach to do this work. And that was a very good thing for us. Looking back, we had our fingers crossed when we went into this, and it was exceeded our expectations. It basically changed the game. The two big contractors we had, Impregilo-Healy Joint Venture on the west side and Kiewit-Bilfinger-Berger on the east side, were our partners. They were never our adversaries. We had some very difficult technical challenges, especially on the west side. And we never had to argue about who's paying for what. We went straight into alternatives analysis and what's the best approach, and okay, let's just go do it. And once both joint ventures were here, they both committed to not self-performing any work that could be done by local businesses, and they both lived up to their commitments. And the other good thing about this type of contract is you hire as you go. So as work became available, they would advertise for local subs to do it. Both had well over 200 first-tier subcontractors, local subcontractors. Impregilo-Healy's Minority Women Emerging Small Business goal was $13 million. They finished at just under $20 million. Kiewit-Bilfinger-Berger's goal was $26 million. They are right now a hair under $32 million. Impregilo-Healy had about 600 craft workers at their peak. Kiewit-Bilfinger-Berger had about 500 at their peak. And if you look at all the subsequent economic benefits of putting that many people to work, it multiplies. The other thing is mining is historically dangerous work. And both contractors were recognized by Oregon OSHA for their safety programs. And we had no serious injuries, no fatalities. We came through it in really good shape. The only last two things I want to say is community support is we really disrupted a neighborhood down at Southeast 18th and Inslee. And we also seriously disrupted the Central East Side Industrial District. And we had a lot of support from the neighbors, and we had a lot of support from the businesses. We work with them. They work with us. And really, I have to thank specifically those two areas, but everyone who supported us in what we were doing. Last thing, I was very fortunate to have very talented BES staff and consultant staff that we had. Everyone came to work every day, just wanted to do the best job that they could. And I was really glad for that. That's it.
Thanks. Before starting the video, I just want to also add my thanks to this really is, as we say on our vehicles, the city that works. A lot of my staff are here today, and a lot of them are, of course, working out in the field. But this took everybody from inspectors, safety staff, accounting people, budgeting people, engineers, clerical folks, the whole gamut of city employees to make this a success. And I want to thank them. I certainly want to thank Bill Ryan, our chief engineer. Paul was in charge of the tunnels, and a lot of the project rested at his doorstep. But Bill and his engineering services staff did a great job on the other parts of the project. Jim Hagerman for his financial acumen, Steve Barron for making sure the wastewater treatment plant is ready to receive the extra flow, and a colleague, Virgil Adderley, that many of you have not had a chance to work with but has been an enormous help in making sure that we're ready for this. Megan Callahan and all of her community outreach staff, they made sure that the businesses we were going to affect, the neighbors we were going to affect, knew what was coming. And I want to also just say a word of thanks to the rest of the city family. Our friends and colleagues in the city attorney's office could not have done it without their help. OMF, purchasing, we issued a lot of contracts in this work. PBOT, we did a lot of work in the right-of-way, needed their assistance and cooperation. Parks, after all, we tunneled under Tom McCall Waterfront Park, and Parks was gracious enough to let us do that. The Fire Bureau that was standing by ready to practice with emergency assistance in tunneling work, which is, as Paul said, dangerous work. The Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, They were the folks that issued this order. They were the folks looking over our shoulders, making sure we were complying, and they were great to work with. And just a word from me to the elected officials who were commissioners in charge of environmental services. It started with Mike Lindbergh that hired me. I had the good fortune of working with him, with Commissioner Eric Sten, with Sam Adams when he was commissioner in charge of environmental services, and with Dan Salzman for probably the longest number of years. And I really appreciate all of your support and assistance during that time. And just a word about Paul. For 20 years, he's worked for the city of Portland, and for the last 10 years in charge of getting this tunnel, these tunnels built. He's done an admirable job and deserves a lot of credit, and he has my thanks for that. So now on to the 12-minute video. Unfortunately, you're going to get to see a little bit of me again in the video, so while I'll step aside, you'll have to put up with me again. Some of you may remember that about 5 years ago, we were fortunate that Walter Cronkite donated his time to narrate a video about Portland's CSO program and challenges. Unfortunately, he passed away before we could have him narrate the final video, but fortunately for us, Leslie Stahl agreed to step in and narrate the final video for free, her gift to the city of Portland. Tom Frisch is the videographer. He's here today. He's the owner of an emerging small business in Portland, and I hope you'll agree with me that he did a great job on this video. We're going to use this. We're going to post it on the web. We're going to use it with school programs to make sure that people understand what they're getting for their investment. So with that, we'll go to the video. And I don't know, can you all see it? Do you have monitors? You can see the video?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, we do.
Thanks.
Of moving water. Sun sparkling on the Willamette River as it flows through the city reminds Portlanders of the surrounding natural environment. The river provides jobs, fish and wildlife habitat, and recreation. To the north, the Columbia Slough, a Willamette tributary, contains one of the country's largest urban wetlands. The slough is a popular place for paddling and home to native wildlife and fish, including coho and Chinook salmon. Despite their value to the city, protecting the river and slough wasn't always a priority. Portland incorporated in 1851, but didn't build a sewage treatment plant for another 100 years. After the city's first treatment plant opened in 1952, water quality improved. But the sewer system in most Portland neighborhoods still combined sewage and stormwater in the same pipes, which is how early city engineers designed it. During dry weather, combined sewers carry all the city's wastewater to the treatment plant. But when it rains, stormwater washes over streets, parking lots, and buildings, and flows into the combined sewer system. During heavy rains, combined sewers can fill to capacity and overflow. Most of these combined sewer overflows, called CSOs, contain about 80% stormwater and 20% sanitary sewage. The bacteria in sanitary sewage can threaten public health and the environment. In 1991, the City of Portland and the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality entered into a formal agreement that required the city to significantly reduce CSOs by 2011. When the 20-year CSO control program began, an average of 6 billion gallons of combined stormwater and sewage overflowed to the Willamette River and Columbia Slough every year. Portland's solution to the CSO problem was to remove as much stormwater as possible from combined sewers, then construct large tunnels to capture, store, and convey most of the remaining flow to the sewage treatment plant.
In order to remove
stormwater from the combined sewers, the Bureau of Environmental Services began with a series of cornerstone projects. We installed stormwater sumps and sedimentation manholes to collect relatively clean water and let it soak into the ground. In some neighborhoods, we installed pipes to carry stormwater runoff to natural treatment ponds. We separated several streams that were once diverted into the combined sewer and piped them directly to the Willamette River. Finally, we created a downspout disconnection program to disconnect roof drains from the combined sewers. Thanks to incentives given to property owners, we disconnected over 56,000 downspouts, which removed nearly 1.2 billion gallons of stormwater from the combined sewers each year and saved an estimated $300 million in construction costs.
The cornerstone projects were cost-effective, relatively easy, green solutions. The more complicated CSO tunnel construction was the next challenge. Because these early projects reduced stormwater flow to the combined sewer system by about one-third, engineers could reduce construction costs by designing smaller tunnels to collect and convey combined sewage. Portland's CSO control approach resulted from 3 years of work with technical experts, interest groups, and the public. The 1994 CSO facilities plan was a mix of stormwater inflow control projects, CSO tunnels, and treatment plant improvements.
We also added an influent pump station for the Columbia Slough Big Pipe. We built new primary clarifiers, added a second outfall pipe, and built a facility to remove chlorine from treated water before discharge to the Columbia River.
The first large CSO construction project was the 3.5-mile-long Columbia Slough Big Pipe, which ranges from 6 to 12 feet in diameter. The project included expanding treatment plant capacity to handle additional flows. The Columbia Slough projects, completed in 2000, reduced CSOs by more than 99% to the slow-moving, environmentally sensitive Columbia Slough. The next project, the West Side Big Pipe, was more complicated. Two tunnel boring machines, one moving north and one moving south, worked 120 feet below ground to construct the 14-foot diameter, 3.5-mile-long tunnel along the Willamette River's west bank and under the river to Swan Island on the east side. The boring machine, working under Portland's waterfront park, tunneled past several Willamette River bridge footings. Work crews injected concrete into the ground to safeguard against surface settlement as the tunnel boring machine passed by. The machines that constructed the West Side Big Pipe used 16-foot diameter cutter heads. As the rotating cutter heads chewed through earth and rocks, the machine mixed displaced soil with bentonite clay and pumped it to the surface. A separation plant removed the bentonite for reuse, and barges haul the soil upriver to help restore the Ross Island Lagoon. As the machines advanced, hydraulic arms behind the cutter head installed precast steel-reinforced concrete segments to form tunnel rings. Jacks pushed against the assembled rings to propel the machine forward. The West Side Big Pipe is large enough for a Greyhound bus to drive through with room to spare. The city excavated five large tunnel shafts as part of the West Side project. The tunnel boring machines, workers, and supplies entered the main mining shaft at Northwest Nikolai Street. The shafts connect combined sewer overflows to the tunnel and provide tunnel maintenance access. The West Side Big Pipe connects to the Swan Island pump station, which was constructed below ground inside a 123-foot diameter shaft. At 160 feet deep, the shaft is large enough to hold a 15-story office building. Because the shaft bottom is well below the water table, pumps operated round the clock during construction to lower the groundwater table within the excavation. During wet weather, the Swan Island pump station can pump 100 million gallons of combined sewage per day from the West Side Big Pipe to the treatment plant. The East Side Big Pipe was Portland's last major CSO construction project, at 22 feet in diameter and almost 6 miles long. It was also the largest public works construction project in the city's history. An adult giraffe could stand up straight inside the East Side Big Pipe. The construction method was similar to the West Side. The city's contractor used a larger, single machine to construct the East Side Tunnel. And there were some new challenges on the east side of the river. Engineers had to alter the original tunnel alignment to avoid the footings of large bridges and ramps at a major freeway interchange. Despite those obstacles, a sophisticated laser guidance system led the tunnel boring machine to within 1 inch of its target. With tunnel construction complete, the city finished work on several smaller CSO projects. They included the Portsmouth Force Main, the Balch Consolidation Conduit, and the Selwood Wet Weather Pump Station. Completing those projects brought major CSO construction to an end. Throughout the $1.4 billion program, the city had no federal or state funding assistance.
I'm very pleased to say that it's a big investment, but it's been done on time and at this point under budget, too. But nevertheless, it's been a significant cost to ratepayers, but I think a lot of ratepayers agree with the ultimate goal, and that is less combined sewer overflows into the Willamette River and the Columbia Slough. For the first time in 150 years, we have no combined sewer overflows anymore in the Columbia Slough. And when we're done in the Willamette, we will go from 50 overflows a year in the winter to less than 4. And then in the summertime, we will have 1 overflow every third year.
It's beautiful, and it's a wonderful part of Portland.
It's calm, it's peaceful, clean.
It sort of makes you feel good just having a big section of nature right there in the city.
Although Portland has completed its requirement to control CSOs by 2011, the combined sewer system remains, and the city's work to keep stormwater out of combined sewers is as important as ever.
We view stormwater as a resource and not a waste. Instead of sending clean rainwater to the sewer system, we're investing in green projects that mimic nature.
Green Street facilities, for example, are small rain gardens planted along streets. They collect and slow street runoff and let water soak into the ground. Soil and plants filter pollutants, and the runoff replenishes groundwater supplies. Eco roofs are another example of green infrastructure. These are vegetated roof systems that absorb rain to reduce runoff. They also cool the air, insulate buildings, and create habitat for birds and beneficial insects. Portland also works with dozens of partners, planting thousands of street and yard trees to expand the urban forest. Trees capture rain, reduce erosion, clean the air, and beautify our neighborhoods.
Portland receives 37 inches of rainfall a year, and we can't simply rely on our big pipe system to handle all that. We have to search for alternatives to putting clean water into our big pipe system. And I think that's not only keeps up with our growing, thriving community, but also speaks to something that's very much cherished here by Portlanders, and that is sustainable solutions that are creative in keeping rainwater out of our system in the first place.
Portland is here because the Willamette River is here. The river helps make Portland a great city. Our predecessors lost sight of that. They used the Willamette as an open sewer and turned their backs on it. We inherited a river abused by past generations. But now we're learning to become active stewards of our waterways. Today, Portland and its citizens work together for a clean, healthy, and vibrant river for us and for generations to come.
Okay, well, thank you, That was a great video. First time I've seen it. Great production. And thank you to Leslie Stahl again. We have one invited panel, and that is Neil Mullane, the DEQ Water Quality Division Administrator, Jorge Guerra, the Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs, Mike Houck of the Urban Green Spaces Institute, and Don Francis, who is the founder of Willamette Riverkeeper. So if you would all come up, we can bring an extra chair, or maybe there's already four. Neil, you want to start off?
Okay. Thank you. For the record, my name is Neil Mullane, and I'm the administrator of the Water Quality Program at DEQ. And I just wanted to, you know, for the department and the state, offer my congratulations to the city and all the team that you have working on this particular project. Back in 91, I was one of the original DEQ people working on this particular project, and throughout the entire length of that particular project, have had different roles at DEQ and really had enjoyed working with the city throughout the entire process, working with Dean and his entire team, and really coming to the conclusion today, I think, is a tremendous accomplishment for the city of Portland. And I think for decades to come, the citizens of Portland and of the state will really enjoy and benefit from the work that was done and the effort that was made by the city of Portland. I think it's tremendous.
Jorge.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Jorge Guerra is my name, and I'm the president for the Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs, OAMI. And I'm representing today Mr. Sam Brooks, who is the chairman of the board for OAMI. And in his behalf, he regrets not being here and give a personal thank you, but he has given me a letter to read to you, addressed to you, and it has follows. On behalf of the Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs, OAMI, and the Minority Women and Emerging Small Businesses that work on the Combined Sewer Overflow Program in the west side and the east side, we thank the City of Portland, Dan Mario and his team, and for the exemplary work to expand opportunities for minority women and emerging small businesses. The Bureau of Environmental Services work hand in hand with OAMI and the Portland Minority Women and Emerging Small Businesses community to establish and achieve higher than expected goals. If we need a standard to increase jobs in Portland, distressed communities, and increase support for minority women and emerging small businesses, the CSO and BES is a standard to emulate. We appreciate the support from the Portland City Council and the Bureau of Environmental Services. I'm sorry I could not attend this council meeting in person. Those are the words from Sam Brooks. And personally, I want to say also thank you and OAMI, who has been around for 25 years. I have been with OAMI for 20 years, and I know most of you, and all the work that we have done together in increasing and providing support to minority women in Michigan, both ministers. We want to thank you.
Thank you. Don?
Okay, I'm going to, try to get my presentation up here. First of all, thank you to the council and mayor for inviting me to present today. I was asked to give a short history of the Willamette River and cleanup efforts. I have images up for you. In 1864, I guess we all know that people poop. So in 1864, Portland created the first sewer. It was a wooden sewer, and it carried sewage right to the Willamette River. Over the years, the Willamette River became pretty contaminated from upstream and Portland sources as well. And so the Portland switched away from using the Willamette as a drinking water source and created the Bull Run watershed, Bull Run Reservoir to supply Portland with clean, pure drinking water. The Willamette continued to degrade as the city of Portland and other communities expanded in size and has increased industrialization. And as a result, the Portland City Club issued a report saying how intolerable, how ugly and filthy the Willamette River is. And this is really the beginning of Willamette River activism started after the 1927 report. Here's a 1936 picture. I'd have to say that the activists continue to use dramatic means to communicate their points, and I guess maybe keeping Portland weird goes back a ways. But this is a Will Lewis, foe of filth, donned this gas mask to demonstrate his disdain for foul odors encountered by himself and others of the sewage committee on a pollution inspection cruise of the Willamette River yesterday. So getting out on the Willamette has always been really a very important thing to do. In 1937, the legislature gave the governor a bill to sign that would create sewage treatment plants for the Willamette River, and the governor vetoed it. So pollution continued. In 1938, Isaac Walton League and other citizens banded together and got enough signatures to put an initiative measure, a referendum, on the ballot in Oregon requiring the creation of the state sanitary authority, as well as creating sewage treatment and treatment for industrial waste. This looks like a kind of a familiar building here in the background in this picture. 4,000 school children, 2 days before the election, 4,000 school children and other citizens rallied around Portland City Hall, and that's what this well-known photo is from, declaring the youth of Portland demand clean rivers. It was a publicity stunt for the election, and then 2 days later, the voters passed the stream purification bill. World War II put the skids on things for a while there. We were busy. And after World War II, the city started construction of sewage treatment plants and piping to convey sewage to the Columbia Water Waste Treatment Plant. The Willamette River was still not so clean, less sewage at that point, but still a lot of industrial waste, reeking sludge rafts coming down the river, especially in the summer, eating up all the oxygen, fish dead in downtown. In 1962, a KGW TV reporter by the name of Tom McCall made up a documentary that aired on Channel 8 called Pollution in Paradise, and calling for Oregonians to take action to clean up the Willamette River. In 1967, Governor McCall, 1966, McCall ran for governor, pledging to clean up the Willamette. In 67, he became governor and created, changed the name of the State Sanitary Authority to the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, made himself the head, and started cracking the whip on polluters, industrial polluters, up and down the Willamette River. They also created a need for industries to start creating permits and issued permits for industries to pollute, and in essence created a template for the Clean Water Act. In 1972, the Willamette landed on the front cover of National Geographic as a river restored. And this really was, as later that year, the Clean Water Act was passed, the Willamette River being an inspiration for that. And the Willamette really was key here, was a paradigm change for the whole world. Rivers, industrial rivers, big city rivers, were just sacrifice zones. If you had a municipality, a big city, it didn't matter if it was in Chicago, Boston, New York, London, didn't matter. The waterways were dead and polluted. That was just the cost of progress. And what we did here in the Willamette River in the 60s, the 30s, the 50s, going back, was to create a whole new paradigm about what an industrial a community river could be. It didn't have to be dirty. It didn't have to be polluted. We could do something. And that's what the National Geographic article highlighted. And it's part of our heritage here as well, which is really important. In 1974, Harbor Drive was torn up and McCall Waterfront Park came in. This was the first step in the rebirth of downtown Portland and the revitalization of downtown. Portlanders turned and faced the river and embraced it rather than getting away from it. All was not necessarily perfect on the Willamette, however. In 1991, with 6 billion gallons of raw sewage, combined raw sewage going into the Willamette, Northwest Environmental Advocates filed a lawsuit under the Clean Water Act, which kind of came back to help the Willamette, forcing the city of Portland to go into negotiations with DEQ, and you all know the story of that one. So we have Northwest Environmental Advocates to thank for that, both for the lawsuit and then also the little boat taking people out on the rivers around Portland, showing people sewers and other issues. And we sometimes refer to that as the sewer tours. And Del Gray, over here behind me, was the primary volunteer skipper for that boat and changed the way a lot of people looked at the rivers and understood them. So today, 2011, we're here to celebrate. I mean, this is great. This is 100 years almost of activity on the Willamette, and we have a lot to be proud of. The rivers are still not healthy, and we have a long ways to go. So I guess the next thing we have to say is we're celebrating 20 years of really hard work, which is really important. What are we going to do for the next 20 years to make the rivers healthier as well? I thank you very much for the time. Thank you.
Thank you, Don.
Thanks, Don.
Give the last word to well-known urban green space advocate and noted author, Mike Houck.
Thank you. Actually, my name is Mike Hauck, Urban Green Spaces Institute. I did not come here to testify this morning. I came to help celebrate this fabulous event, closure of this project. I did sit on all of the committees going back to 1991, and we had many conversations with DEQ, EPA, and others trying to persuade us, the agencies, to allow the city to maybe draw this out a little longer and maybe capture $200 to $300 million to do more of the green stuff. We went ahead with the plan that EPA and DEQ approved. And I think the hallmark of this project, as fabulous as that pipe is, I mean, it really was a spectacular engineering feat. It's underground. It's out of sight. People really don't see that pipe. What they do see is all the green infrastructure that the city has integrated with that gray infrastructure. And I think that's the most, from my perspective, the most significant accomplishment of this project, is to set the city on a course where green infrastructure is, from here on out, will be integrated thanks to the Greater Green Program and the all the cornerstone projects and so forth. I sat on the committee that interviewed for the director of the Bureau of Environmental Services, and I can't say how proud I am that we selected Dean Marriott. And also, I think the Bureau of Environmental Services is one of the premier agencies throughout the country. We've got a lot of young, very creative, innovative folks who are really going to ensure that that green infrastructure is well integrated into the city and into the future. So just congratulations. I'm incredibly proud of you and your predecessors for staying the course and putting together this fabulous program into the Bureau.
Thank you. Thank you all. That completes the invited testimony.
How many? Thank you all very much. Really appreciate it. How many people are signed up?
We have four more people.
Okay.
Please come on up. Travis Williams, Bill Mariucci, Bob Solinger, and Derek Chisholm.
Hi, welcome. Hi.
Hi.
Who'd like to begin?
Good morning. I guess I'll begin. I'll keep my comments rather brief. My name is Derek Chisholm. I'm a project manager with Parametrics, and for 5 years I've been one of the folks who have volunteered time on a project oversight committee. We have been looking at safety performance, fiscal management, scheduling, and other matters rather frequently at times and infrequently at other times, and with the charge of bringing to your attention any issues that we saw that needed your intervention or your guidance. And it has been a relatively easy task because of some good contracting mechanisms and a very strong project management team. And we have not been forced to bring any issues to your attention that required further direction or redirection of the project. It's been a pleasure to serve our great city in this manner.
Thanks to you and everyone else for your service.
Yeah, thanks for your service.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Bill Mariucci, and I've served as the project director for Kiewit Bilfinger Berger on the Eastside CSO Tunnel Project. And I think that it's been demonstrated pretty clear this morning this was a total team effort. And I know that on behalf of KBB, we'd like to thank the hundreds of craft workers local who were dedicated to safe work every day and producing only the highest quality product. You heard about the hundreds of subcontractors, suppliers, most all local, who brought their skill and their expertise to the project from beginning to end. And I'd like to also add personally, last but not least, a thank you to the Bureau of Environmental Services, particularly Paul Gribben and his day-to-day management of the overall CSO program. And you heard about the dedicated staff that we had the opportunity to work with at all levels within our organization, first-class entity. And we're very happy and pleased to have played just a very small role in the overall cleanup of the Willamette River. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Bob Solinger. I'm the Conservation Director for the Portland Audubon Society. I've also served on the BES Budget Committee for the past 8 years. I'm here speaking on behalf of Audubon today, though. So I want to congratulate the city, Dean and Paul and BES and City Council for this. This is really is a monumental occasion. I was struck by Paul's comment that one of the goals was to stay off the front page of the Oregonian. And unfortunately, I think he's done too good of a job of that, because the headlines too often have been dominated by criticism of BES for some relatively minor expenditures. And I think the real story of BES is, especially for those concerned about the rates, is the fact that the big pipe came in on time and on budget, and also that simultaneously BES started doing the kinds of green infrastructure, integrating that into the gray infrastructure that we need to do to ensure that we don't repeat the mistakes of the past.